And the other issue is the patient with known axillary disease who's getting neoadjuvant therapy. How do you approach those patients? Do you still do post-neoadjuvant therapy sentinel node? And if it's negative, do you not dissect the axilla?
Right. So we try to follow the guidelines that sort of emerged from the Z1071 trial, which was the registry trial of women with biopsy-proven positive nodal disease prior to neoadjuvant who converted to clinically negative axilla and then had sentinel node biopsy. So in that study, the overall false negative rate was almost 13%, 12.5% or so, which is higher than what we are used to seeing in primary surgery. In primary surgery sentinel nodes, we often have large series now with more experience where the false negative rate is under 5%. So a false negative rate of 13% in the Z1071 trial for the overall trial group of 700 and some women was actually on the high side. But in that trial, the subsets that had acceptable false positive rates, which were in the realm of what we see with primary surgery in the 5 to 7% range, those were women who had two tracers used and who had three nodes retrieved. So we try to follow those guidelines so that when I'm doing a primary surgery sentinel node, I don't use two tracers anymore. I only use the radioactive tracer. But in the neoadjuvant setting, I always use two tracers, and we always try to go for three nodes.
And if it's negative using that technique, then you do not do axillary dissection.
Do not dissect the axilla, correct.
And that includes patients who present with palpable nodes.
Correct. They have to be clinically node negative with a radiological response. So the neoadjuvant therapy must convert them to clinically node negative. If they're still clinically node positive after neoadjuvant, then they don't qualify for sentinel node.
So it's interesting, this lady had a triple negative breast cancer, and it was large, it was 4 centimeters. But when we did the same survey, this national survey, we actually had a poster at San Antonio last year reporting on that, we found that with triple negative disease and HER2 positive disease, that people were generally using neoadjuvant therapy preferentially if the tumor was more at 2 centimeters or greater. Is that the way you and your center approach neoadjuvant therapy? If you have a patient who comes in with a 2.2 centimeter biopsy-proven triple negative breast cancer, you can do breast-conserving surgery and the axilla is clinically negative, do you generally do the surgery or have them get the neoadjuvant therapy?
So I have to say that my view has changed a little bit since the opening of the ECOG-ACRIN trial that we talked about. Randomization with residual disease to carboplatin or capecitabine. Prior to the opening of that study, I was reluctant to send women for neoadjuvant therapy simply because they had triple negative disease. So a 2-centimeter tumor that I could easily resect with breast conservation, I would not send for neoadjuvant therapy. But I think, again, as this area evolves, with the availability of an option. So the way I looked at it, and this is, again, something that's open for discussion, but the way I saw it is if we do the neoadjuvant therapy for someone who doesn't need it for breast conservation, to allow breast conservation, and then she has a lot of residual disease, all it tells her is that she's at high risk for relapse, but we have nothing to offer her at that point. So in that setting, I didn't see it as really worthwhile to get that information of this patient has resistant disease. But now we have something different to offer. So with the availability of this study, and I've really been rooting for this study in ECOG as well, with the availability of this study, the patient now has a therapeutic option, something actionable based on the residual disease. So as those options become more widely available and become established as being useful, then I think it makes sense to use neoadjuvant kind of in a test way to see if the tumor is sensitive or not.
I think it's really interesting thought you have there and very interesting study that's being done. But how about if I make the argument that based on what you were just talking about in terms of the way you and really most surgical investigators approach the axilla, how about if I say, okay, put aside the ECOG study, I think that I see in your algorithm that that same patient who could go for breast conserving surgery still, by doing neoadjuvant therapy, maybe you're decreasing the chances she's going to have an axillary dissection.
That's true, and that is actually being discussed more and more, and we are integrating that into our decision strategy as well. So, yes, that is an issue in terms of possibly being able to spare axillary nodes by using neoadjuvant therapy.
In the same vein, what about HER2-positive disease in terms of the neoadjuvant setting? Again, we saw in our survey that the patient had 2 centimeters or greater, even if they were clinically negative. Investigators preferred neoadjuvant therapy. Is that the way you and your group approach it?
We certainly refer a lot more women for neoadjuvant therapy if they have triple negative or HER2 positive disease. And particularly over the years, we've had intermittently institutional trials open. So certainly if there's a trial open, we'll refer them. But even otherwise, again, as this paradigm is evolving, it's becoming more and more common to refer women with triple negative disease and HER2 positive disease for neoadjuvant treatment.
And I think there actually is also an NSABP study in HER2 positive disease with neoadjuvant therapy, like what you were just describing with triple negative, of post neoadjuvant residual disease. I think it's T-DM1 versus trastuzumab.
Correct. There is. Yes, that's correct.
There's also a trial looking at T-DM1 in the adjuvant setting, kind of a follow-up to the trial that looked at paclitaxel and trastuzumab. Have you had any of your patients get T-DM1? The thing that I think a lot of surgeons probably are maybe not aware of this drug, but what's interesting is it doesn't seem to have very much in terms of chemo side effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we have not seen anyone go on it other than in the metastatic setting. So when it's discussed as an option for HER2-positive patients at Northwestern, it's generally in the metastatic setting.